communications network was so powerful, it was capable of sending 30 million text messages per minute.
President Trump speaks at the UN today. The World Health Organization, the latest to offer pushback over the Trump administration's claims of a link between women who take Tylenol in pregnancy and autism. The WHO's Tariq Yasarevic.
If the link between acetaminophen and autism were strong, it would likely have been consistently observed across multiple studies.
The WHO also denying vaccines are linked to autism. Variety's Brian Steinberg on Jimmy Kimmel Live's return to ABC stations tonight.
Disney prides itself on being a very creative company. A lot of Hollywood was against this. So I'm sure that Disney noticed very quickly.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Come out to support the Boys of Winter. Join in the excitement and the thrill of each Wisconsin Rapids River Kings home game. Come cheer on the team with your friends at 105.5 FM.
For WIRI and WFHR News, I'm Shali Pittman filling in for Melissa Kay. Several Wisconsin County sheriffs are being sued by the ACLU of Wisconsin for cooperating with ICE. Civic Media's Isabella Nieto reports.
The ACLU of Wisconsin announced last week that it has filed a petition on behalf of immigrant rights group Voces de la Frontera. According to a statement, the group is asking the state Supreme Court to make it illegal for Wisconsin jails to honor voluntary requests from ICE to hold individuals for an additional 48 hours after they should have been released. This additional hold allows ICE to take custody of and deport them. If the lawsuit is successful, Wisconsin local and state law enforcement would not be able to hold anyone in jail beyond their release dates. For Civic Media News, I'm Isabella Nieto.
And a UW-Madison professor testified to Congress about nuclear fusion last week. Civic Media's Savannah Tome Olson has more.
The House Science Committee's Energy Subcommittee held a hearing last week about the future of fusion, and one of four witnesses was Stephanie Deem, who's conducting experiments at UW-Madison to make fusion power easier and less expensive.
Fusion is a dense, virtually limitless source of power derived from hydrogen that could radically transform humanity. Fusion, the process that powers the sun, occurs when light elements are forced together and combined under extreme conditions, releasing vast amounts of energy. On Earth, we use magnetic bottles or powerful lasers to create these fusion conditions. Fusion gives us hope.
Lawmakers on the subcommittee say it could be the future of energy in America. I'm Savannah Tome Olson.
And I'm Shali Pittman for WIRI and WFHR News. For news anytime, visit WFHR.com and WIRI.FM.
A new pitcher for the crew.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, baseball.
A new starting pitcher tonight for Milwaukee when the Brewers face the Padres in San Diego. He's 30-year-old left-hander Bruce Zimmerman, called up over the weekend to take the place of Brandon Woodruff, now on IL with a strained lat. The Brewers losing last night to the Padres, 5-4 in 11 innings. San Diego clinched their spot in the postseason for a fourth time in the last 6 years. NFL. The Packers had a field goal block Sunday that could have been a game winner against the Browns. Packers head coach Matt LaFleur.
The unfortunate thing about special teams in general is when there is a mistake, there are catastrophic mistakes. I would say most of the emphasis typically when you're just talking across a league is placed on punt. Bottom line with us, I think it comes down to just being disciplined and trusting your technique.
That's Matt LaFleur with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 97.5 WFHR.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Some areas of fog through mid to late morning, otherwise more clouds than sun with high temps in the mid to upper 60s. For tonight, mostly cloudy skies with a low near 54. On Wednesday, partial sunshine, a nice day with highs right around 70. Right now, it's 60 degrees.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
This is Beth, host of The Kitchen's Open. Have you ever found yourself asking,
what's a recipe for cookies my kids will love?
How do I avoid giving my guests food poisoning?
How would a restaurant chef prepare this meal?
If so, then tune into The Kitchen's Open, the show within the morning show each Monday morning at the start of the 10 o'clock hour. I'll tackle topics, teach techniques, or tell you what to do or not to do when it comes to cooking or the kitchen. I'll also bring you interviews with local chefs and restaurant owners. The Kitchen's Open, brought to you by The Hotel Mead. We'll tell you something good.
Maggie Dawn.
At the top of the show, I'm joined by former U.S. Attorney James Santel as we discuss the Supreme Court's dismantling of all independent agencies. Oh my goodness. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Wisconsin on Civic Media. You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. It is 8:06. It is nice to have you back here up north on this Tuesday morning, September 23rd, 2025. We have our Political Tuesday tag team coming up. Cam Stevenson from the nation's capital and Courier Newsroom and the Below the Beltway newsletter, talking about what's happening with the potential for a government shutdown and much more. So Cam Stevenson on the way, followed by Dan Schaefer at 8:35, Civic Media's political editor, founder of the Recombobulation Area, talking all about Wisconsin political news. But before we get to all of that, we welcome back meteorologist Brittany Merlot, along with Parker Olson, who's producing things down in Madison Studio A2. From Rob in Tigerton, it's sunny and 53 in Tigerton. It's sunny in Tigerton?
It's sunny in Wausau. I don't see a cloud, not any fog. Isn't that crazy?
I don't know if it's sunny here.
Locked in with clouds. You don't have a window, Parker. You couldn't tell. It could be raining frogs right now.
So hard. I can see windows, but I can't really see.
Rob says he'll be back mowing grass after being off for 3 days because of the rain. Yeah, that sounds about right. Let's see. What else did he have to say? Oh, he wanted to wish a happy birthday to his brother-in-law, Dave. His birthday was yesterday. He watched the Lions defeat the Ravens last night. I'm not going to put that kind of... I'll invest in Packer games, but I'm not going to be doing Monday Night Football with the Lions.
Seriously?
So, yes.
They're good now.
I know they're good now. That I'm not going to necessarily...
Not like watching the Browns play against the Packers.
Well, yeah, please. Alicia says it's cloudy in Green Bay. So now that we've given you just the most higgledy-piggledy sky condition forecast possible, Brittany, where does it all go from here?
Well, it's all going to lift and clear, and we are going to see, unfortunately, more clouds south. So Madison, Milwaukee area, and down that way, you're going to stick with more clouds because that front is parked right over Racine, dipping down into northern Illinois. But the good thing is that it dips. So that means all of the rain is going to be staying south of the state. So we're only looking at chances of maybe a spotty sprinkle or two midday. And it looks like that stays up north mostly. Then tomorrow, those spotty sprinkles wrap over Lake Michigan and stay southeast by Milwaukee, Green Bay, and into the Fox Valley. And then the whole system clears on out of here and a high pressure moves in, giving us nothing but abundant sunshine for the rest of the week, into the weekend, and even into early next week. It is going to be gorgeous. So we've just got to be patient with this fog in the mornings. This is going to happen again tonight and maybe tomorrow night in places. After that, the winds start to pick up and the fog should not be a problem. But we are looking at high temperatures today in the mid-60s north to mid-70s south. It will be mixed skies, more sunshine north, more clouds south. And then tomorrow, a little bit cooler, 60s statewide.
All right. Well, I heard on local Eau Claire media this morning, they were almost apologetic. Like, it's the first day of fall. And they're like, well, but it's not going to be fall. Like, it's going to be really warm today. I'm like, why are you apologizing for warm weather? Oh, I'm sorry. It's not snowing yet. They may as well have said, I'm like, no, it can be the first day of fall. It does not. We don't need highs in the 40s yet. Okay.
No, not yet. No. We just want the fall colors and some sunshine. That's what we want for fall.
And that's
right?
the thing. We mentioned that yesterday. It's kind of a nerve-wracking time that you don't want anything to happen storm-wise that, you know, blows the leaves off before we get all the nice change of colors.
It's so true. So I'm glad we have this dry stretch ahead, mm-hmm. but those colors pop and big systems stay away.
Pop the colors, get the crops off the field. Exactly, Brittany. Yep. Thank you very much. Have a great day. Hey, let's talk newsletters for a sec here because it's the thing right now is you get to your email box and you subscribe to the ones that you like. It's like a morning paper or an evening newspaper, but you get the sections that you want to read and you don't have to get ink on your hands and throw the rest away. So that's why we talk about our daily newsletter and our weekly newsletter on Sunday mornings. You head over to upnorthnewswi.com. You click subscribe in the banner on top of the homepage and sign up for one or both of those. Civic Media has a new daily newsletter filled with links to show highlights and more. Go check that out. CivicMediaToday.substack.com. Yes, I'll say it again. CivicMediaToday.substack.com is out there. And of course, Up North News is part of Courier Newsroom, lots of state outlets, podcasts, newsletters. And if you want dispatches from Washington, D.C., well, Cam Stevenson puts one together from Capitol Hill. It's called Below the Beltway, and you can get details at beltway.news or couriernewsroom.com, or just listen for the next 8 minutes or so as we talk to Cam Stevenson from the nation's capital. Cam, good morning. How are you?
Hey, morning, Pat. I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. I always feel like we have to start with, you know, you taking your family and uprooting them, moving them from Arizona to the nation's capital. I feel like we get this almost like this reality series of, you know, Cam moves the family, Cam to the capital. The family is there. How goes the adjustment? I know you were like in temporary quarters for a while. Are you in your new digs?
Not yet. It's a slow process in the housing market right now. So between finding someone to buy our place in sure. Phoenix so we can find a place out here. It's a process, but gives us a chance to explore, figure out the neighborhoods and see what part of the city we like.
There you go. And we can play a role in that. If anybody is interested in buying Cam's house in Phoenix, just reach out to us through the radio station and we'll get you connected. I mean,
there we go.
We don't just do politics. We can do a little HGTV stuff here while we're at it. Okay. But you do have your day job of working as national correspondent for Courier Newsroom and looking at the recent edition of Below the Beltway. A few different topics in there. We've talked about the potential of a government shutdown at length already today. So let me set that one aside for a moment. In the wake of the Charlie Kirk killing, there has been what I'm calling a backlash to the backlash, where people said, look, we get that you are angry and upset that not everybody's a Charlie Kirk fan and that some people are actually speaking out about what Charlie Kirk stood for and said. But the backlash to that is coming awfully close to infringing or trampling upon people's First Amendment rights to freedom of expression. And you point out in Below the Beltway that, you know, attempts to limit free speech didn't just happen recently and don't just happen to late night TV hosts. They happen in places like our classrooms.
Yeah. And actually, you know, our conversation last week is kind of what inspired me to look into this. Is when we were talking about Representative Van Orden and his just aggressive, blatant use of his platform as an elected representative to call for people to be fired, for calls people to be silenced because they use their free speech. I wanted to look into, one, the legality of that, which is dubious, depending on which court you take it to, I guess. But really how we got to the point where that was socially acceptable. And what I found is a lot of these attacks on free speech and attacks on honest intellectual conversation started in the classroom with attacks on public schools. Now, in Wisconsin, what's the public-private school situation there? Are there vouchers?
We have a voucher program that is undergoing explosive growth right now. And I know we've talked to you about the Arizona aspect of that. It's just gobbling up such a growing part of the state budget, and yet without the kind of oversight and transparency that the public schools get.
Yes. Yeah. It's, I mean, really, it's a way, it's a way to funnel taxpayers to corporate school companies, essentially. And the way that they do that is, one, by convincing state legislatures to let people use public tax dollars to pay, subsidize private school, which sounds like you're all very familiar with. But what we don't look into too much is how it got to the point where there are enough legislators and enough people on board for that to even become part of the system. And it really started a couple decades ago with just sowing distrust in public education, sowing distrust in teachers, you know, calling into question their ability to teach, while simultaneously taking away their ability to offer a strict classroom. You know, where parents were simultaneously being hands off while expecting their teachers to do everything. This was actually a very well coordinated plot by members of the far right to erode public education. And this serves two purposes. One, like I mentioned, it allows these private for-profit corporations to set up schools, take public tax dollars, and then either shut down or close out, you know, certain populations that they don't want in their schools, usually divided by race and economics. And two, it allows them to essentially filter whatever they want their kids to learn. You know, they teach false history, they teach incorrect civics, they give poor examples of what leadership looks like. And so by the time these kids go through high school, you know, we have honestly the free speech problems that we have now, where people don't want to hear what they don't, what they've been told is bad. People resort to violence, like what we saw with Kirk. And we see that public schools in Arizona anyway, and unfortunately, I imagine this will happen soon in Wisconsin, is that public schools are going to start to close because they won't have enough money and they won't have enough students.
Yep, we're talking to Cam Stevens, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom, about, you know, that topic and more. And I also wanted to take note of something you wrote in Below the Beltway about Trump, President Trump, again, sending American troops into a, now a third American city without real justification. That, of course, would be, you know, Memphis coming after Washington, D.C. and Los Angeles. He continues to, you know, threaten to do the same with Chicago. And so tell the folks a bit about what you wrote about the decision to send troops into Memphis.
Yeah, so I've been interested in this topic for a lot of reasons. One, I live in a city that's being occupied. And two, it's something that that Trump has wanted to do since his first term and is now finally actualizing that dream. But what we're seeing is that once the National Guard gets to these cities, they aren't doing anything. You know, they're honestly ridiculed online for that because they sit around or they're, you know, picking up litter or what have you. But what I was wondering is why they keep sending troops if they can't do anything. And according to law, they're actually not allowed to do anything because military is forbidden from exercising domestic law enforcement. It's not their role. It's not what they're allowed to do. And it's not what they're doing, despite what the Trump administration is saying. They, you know, they can't help with addressing crime, even if that was the goal. And so what I wanted to look into is, since they can't do that, why this expansion of troops? So I spoke with elected leaders in Memphis, in D.C., and in California. And what it seems to be is that they are essentially stationing troops similar to how military strategically stations troops prior to combat, where they see places where they're expecting there to be conflict. And so they're preparing their troops and preparing their forces preemptively so that when there is a conflict, they don't have to deploy and get them there, that they're already on site.
Conflict or midterm elections, as the case may be. And I'm sure we'll be talking more about that later as well. Cam Stevens's newsletter, Below the Beltway, you can get it at beltway.news or couriernewsroom.com for all of Cam's dispatches from Capitol Hill. We still have in our next half hour Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area talking to us about Wisconsin politics before we wrap things up on a Tuesday morning. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Crockett Septic provides professional septic system pumping, inspections, and portable sanitation rentals. Trust the experts and keep your system running smoothly. Call Crockett Septic today, 715-712-3456, or visit CrockettSeptic.com.
Confidence is knowing you're ready to handle whatever comes your way. That's what it feels like to take on your workday with Cintas. They make sure your AEDs are up to date, your fire extinguishers are tested and inspected, your floor mats are cleaned and delivered, and your workwear looks good, feels good, and is freshly laundered with the Cintas Apparel Plus program. So are you ready to take on today? Visit Cintas.com.
Oh, I'm ready!
And get ready for the workday.
To everyone who feels young at heart, come treat yourself to our new cereal concrete mixers at Culver's.
For a limited time, we're blending our creamy, fresh frozen custard with your favorite cereals. Choose from chocolatey Cocoa Puffs, magical Lucky Charms, or my favorite, Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Stop by Culver's or order ahead in the app or online and feel the joy in every spoonful. From Wisconsin with love.
Welcome to Delicious.
Culver's on 8th Street South in Wisconsin Rapids.
Today's job market is full of demand for skilled trade workers. Electricians, welders, mechanics, these and other trades are the backbone of every community. They're also a huge part in making sure the Army National Guard is always fulfilling its mission of service to our country and communities. Soldiers train to keep the power flowing, engines running, and supplies moving. The skilled trades these soldiers perform are the same ones needed in today's civilian workforce. Army National Guard soldiers are on the fast track to learning skills that can set them up for success at home with companies looking to hire the best. With options from plumber to helicopter mechanic and everything in between, soldiers are able to select the trades that best fit their lives. Their resumes are being built through their paid training and part-time service. Find out how you too can learn a trade profession and serve your community and country by visiting NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. And now for something local from WFHR and WIRI Studios.
Read those a little bit more for a city boy. It meant it opened up a whole new world of interest to me and a whole bunch of different things that I found really cool about not only cranberries, but just growing in our ag industry in general. And some of that to me is interesting as well because of the some of what you've shared with us today about the different factors that can play into these things, how much farmers' share of information and some of that. And some of that is kind of leads into the research roundtable that's going to be going on. I want to talk a little bit about that, Michael, this research roundtable that's coming up.
Yeah, we got a research roundtable coming up in November, and we invite everybody in, all the growers. We usually get a large group coming in. But this is sort of in cooperation with UW. It's in cooperation with UW Extension. It's in cooperation with USDA. So everybody that comes out and does research on cranberries. And this is a nice two-way street for us to be able to communicate directly to the researchers as well as the researchers be able to communicate back with us. And it's that level of communication that helps them to sort of plan their research agendas better, but also for us to do the translational science piece of it and take what they do and get it directly into the marshes. One of the reasons why Wisconsin is just so bloody strong when it comes to cranberries is this research relationship. We are trying to get ahead of issues before they're ever issues. And those partnerships down there in Madison, they're the ones that really help us to move forward.
When I came to first doing this job, I love to learn, and I don't care what the topic is. If it has less and less to do with things I normally learn about, the better, because I'm learning about something completely new. With this job in particular, anything involving agriculture was pretty much in that area. and for me, I have found that I come back to the most that I enjoy is how much the ag industry, whether we're, again, talking about dairy farms or cranberry growers or any of these things, and the old school sharing of information and how key that is to this and how far that brings our industries in this state in particular. And it's nothing against any other state. I have done my homework on this one. And when it comes to that, I will say that I don't see this happen as much in other states. I think that it does, and I'm not saying it doesn't, but not like it does here, where it's almost like a game of the old tin can, and every farmer has one, and they're just sharing this information. And how much stronger our industries are because of that information being shared.
You are so spot on. I mean, I can't even begin to give you the number of stories where somebody picks up that tin can and they're just calling the person right down the line. They're warning them, hail is on the way. They're letting them know, hey, we're seeing this inside of our fields this year. Are you? The communication is unbelievable. I do have a background in ag, but I got to admit that when I came to Wisconsin and I started working with these cranberry folks, I've seen nothing like this in my entire history. I mean, you always get farmers that help each other because that's just what ag does. But Wisconsin goes so far and above anything that I've ever seen before. And then even cranberries, even above and beyond that. I mean, within Wisconsin, you got the Farm Bureau, you got the ag coalitions and everybody. I mean, the cow people talk to the cheese people talk to the cranberry people, cranberry talk to the ginseng people, and we all have a good time out of it. And you got to see the lunches there because,
I can't imagine, man,
all out of this world. But yeah. Even within the cranberry community, these guys are always talking to each other. They're always sharing. Some piece of equipment broke down and it just happened last week. And you would sit back and think that, well, their neighbor's going to be like, wah-ha-ha-ha, that means they'll take more of my berries. No, they're putting their piece of equipment on top of a truck. They're going next door to their neighbor, and they're helping out because, you know what, that's just what they do.
On our morning show, I always like to wrap up with good stories of the day. Anytime I'm ever looking for one or scrambling for one, I can just look at the ag industry. And yeah, there's billions of good stories around there to just pull from. It's a really good point that you bring up. And I think it's sort of refreshing for people to be reminded of that sometimes, that it exists. And that can be a thing. And that is a thing.
If you're looking for the good in this world, go find a Wisconsin farmer. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got to tell you that right now. I needed that in my life. When I came on, we had all just come off of the plague and COVID, and you needed some happy in your life, and I found it right here. And you're right. You can't walk off of a cranberry marsh, especially inside of Wisconsin, and just not feel better about the world.
Well said. Appreciate that. To that point, and while there are some great events coming up, and there's even more coming up in January and everything we'll be talking about on our shows and mentioning, and maybe drag Grant back in here to talk to us. And I'll call him by Grant and not Michael like I have done twice already, I think, today. I just interviewed a Michael. I'm sorry.
I answer to anything.
I appreciate that.
I got references on that.
You're a team player, man. You just keep rolling. I appreciate that. You mentioned something in our pregame a little bit that I wanted to make sure to hit home, and all these events are great, but there are tours going on of a lot of our local cranberry marshes wherever you happen to be listening to us, and every one is unique. There are no reruns with these. If you haven't done it in a while or you've never done it, I encourage you to find out more and reach out to those marshes and see if you can take a tour.
Absolutely. It's all you have to do is just Google Wisconsin and cranberries, and you'll get to our site. And our site has a tab on it for a number of the marshes that you typically need to call ahead. You can sort of reserve it and get on a marsh tour. You can go to Cranfest. They're going to be running marsh tours the entire weekend. Even just Google marsh tours, and you're going to be able to find somebody. The only thing that I ask folks is that if you're up and out on a Saturday or a Sunday and you're driving down the Cranberry Highway, please just don't pull off to the side and go walking into somebody's marsh. Those suckers, they can be a little bit dangerous if you don't know what you're going for. So make sure that you do something from one of the approved tours and just stay safe out there.
Yeah. And Grant, thank you so much for the time. You're gonna have to come back real soon, man, especially as these events next year are coming up and everything. Love to have you on, talk about things, and certainly would love to talk about how the harvest went as a whole and everything once we get kind of to the end of this. Thank you so much for the time,
we Grant. Can't wait to see how it goes either.
And as Grant was telling you, if you want to find out more about our Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association, just throw that into your search bar, Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association. Not only will you find their website, wiscran.org, but find them on social media, subscribe to their pages, and share their posts on your page. You just never know who might see it otherwise. Grant, thanks again for the time.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, everybody, for joining us for another edition of WFHR's Rabbits Report.
You were listening to the Rapids Report, sponsored by Crockett Septic. To hear the full interview, visit WFHR.com, the Civic Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Locally Grown Radio, WFHR.
You're listening to Locally Grown Radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
For WIRI and WFHR News, I'm Shali Pittman filling in for Melissa Kay. While the federal ERA has yet to be ratified, a Wisconsin amendment has been introduced in Madison. Civic Media's Lisa Hale reports.
Two Wisconsin lawmakers introduced the Wisconsin Equal Rights Amendment to the legislature on Monday, co-authored by Democratic Representative Breanne Brown of Whitewater and Democratic Senator LaTanya Johnson of Milwaukee. The ERA reads, equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by this state or by any political subdivision of the state on account of sex, gender identity, race, color, sexual orientation, disability, religion, national origin, marital status, family status, age, ancestry, or any other immutable characteristic. At a press conference about the Wisconsin ERA, the Appleton area now chapter president Irene Strobin said that the state ERA is more comprehensive than the federal amendment. Several individuals emphasized the importance of the bill, not only for women, but also for minorities. Sarah Long Radolph said, as a Black woman, she has seen the need for an ERA firsthand while working as a single mother in the Fox Valley.
I was a woman making less money while doing the same job as my male counterparts.
The youngest of the speakers was 14-year-old Tova Levine. She said an ERA is crucial for today's children.
Every single child deserves this.
The Equal Rights Amendment for the Wisconsin Constitution must be approved in two consecutive legislative sessions before it can be put before the voters on a ballot. For Civic Media, I'm Lisa Hale.
For WIRI and WFHR News, I'm Shali Pittman, filling in for Melissa Kay.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Peach Wabba. With all the negativity and polarization in the news lately, it appears that TV viewers just want to watch people dance. Dancing with the Stars premiered last Tuesday night and pulled big numbers with almost 6 million viewers. That's a big improvement over last season. There was also a big uptick in the votes cast by viewers, with 21 million total for an increase of 163%. The real reason for the rise in viewership, according to critics, is star power. If you're still watching Disney, check it out on Tuesday nights. Speaking of Disney, if you're upset about Jimmy Kimmel Live being suspended by Disney and ABC, check out Last Week Tonight on HBO. It is an absolutely brilliant show, both funny and informative. Fresh off his Emmy win for Outstanding Scripted Variety Series and Outstanding Writing for a Variety Series, John Oliver went after Nexstar and Sinclair for cozying up to the FCC. During the episode, Oliver, self-deprecating as always, said he fully expects to be deported back to the UK. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
97.5 WFHR, locally grown radio, and home to mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. Some areas of fog through mid to late morning, otherwise more clouds than sun with high temps in the mid to upper 60s. For tonight, mostly cloudy skies with a low near 54. On Wednesday, partial sunshine, a nice day with highs right around 70. Right now, it's 60 degrees.
You could think you found your dream home online. The kitchen island looks perfect for your inner chef. The backyard, a paradise for your green thumb. And that extra room, hello walk-in closet. But here's the twist. The lot next door just got rezoned for years of construction. And this sound, yeah, you're going to be hearing a lot of that. Don't let your dream home turn into a nightmare. Work with the expertise and ethical training of a realtor, here to guide and help protect you from the surprises you didn't see coming. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors, right by you.
Lakeland Care is proud to be named one of the top workplaces in Wisconsin for 2025. But what really sets us apart is our commitment to providing personalized support for frail elders and adults with disabilities. Our care teams go above and beyond to help our members live their best lives with dignity and independence. Interested in becoming a member? Visit your local Aging and Disability Resource Center to see if you qualify. To learn more, visit www.lakelandcareinc.com. Lakeland Care, together we build better lives.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, unfortunately, more PFAS are showing up in Wisconsin's duck population. David Drake will be here to break that down and what that means. Don't miss it.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
Tomorrow on the program, we will be talking to the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jill Underle. She gave the State of Education address at the state capitol late last week, and so we will be talking to her about some of what she had to say about the state of education, and maybe if there was anything that didn't make the final cut, other things that she wanted to say in her remarks under the Capitol Dome. So we'll have her on. We will also have a guest who's an expert in public health policy. Kathy Hempstead is her name. She's a national health policy expert with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, talking about healthcare tax credits and what they mean for individuals across America, especially now that they're in danger of being slashed by that, you know, big bloated boondoggle that Donald Trump passed. Or maybe they'll get restored because that's what Democrats want, to avoid a government shutdown. Regardless, Kathy Hempstead will talk about that. She and Dr. Jill Underle, state superintendent, tomorrow here on the program. But this morning on the program, we have Dan Schaefer. He's the political editor for Civic Media. He's the founder of the Recombobulation Area, therecombobulationarea.news. Mr. Schaefer, good morning. How are you?
Mr. Kreitlow, good morning to you as well. Always wonderful to join you here on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Where do we want to start here?
Want to start today, Pat?
I want to start with a new package of bills, or maybe it's a single bill by Republicans about elections that essentially wants to swat a fly with a howitzer. The swatting the fly, the very easy thing to do would be to allow for Monday processing of absentee ballot envelopes, not the ballots themselves, but verifying the names, the addresses, the witnesses, all that kind of stuff, so that then you can open them, run them on Tuesday on election day. Mm-hmm. That should be just a clean bill, should have been done years ago to get rid of that tired talking point about, you know, late night ballot counting in Milwaukee and other big cities.
It but got close last time, too, a standalone bill. It passed the assembly and hit roadblocks in the Senate. So yes, it did have some inertia to get that done. Unfortunately, didn't get across the finish line.
It did not. And so now to hear Assembly Minority Leader Scott Krug tell it, they've got a bill that'll do this. Oh, but by the way, there are some strings attached. Here come the howitzers. And why did they make this so complicated to add webcams on municipal websites pointed at drop boxes and law enforcement, accompanying any visits to ballot boxes to move ballots? It's almost like they're not serious about wanting to do the easy thing, that they have to throw all these hard things on there too.
Well, they haven't been able to do the easy thing. That's part of the problem here. And I guess if nothing else, I have to give them credit for, you know, if something fails, try something different. And so they're trying something different. I'm not sure. I want to see some more of the details on what exactly they're proposing for drop boxes, what they're proposing for law enforcement. You know, I think there are so many of these election related issues on the right that just comes down to telling your voters the truth about these things and telling your voters there is no conspiracy about late night ballot dumps in Milwaukee. There is no conspiracy about ballot drop boxes. There is no conspiracy about, you know, the chain of I'm blanking on the word here, but there is no conspiracy and just like the possession of the ballots and all of that. And so much of that since 2020 in particular has just come down to being honest with your voters about this, being honest with your supporters. And, you know, so things don't spiral out of control and we end up with ridiculous Gableman investigations that spend millions of dollars and do nothing. Just like part of it is just you just need to be more honest with your voters about the reality of these things. But you know what? If that's not breaking through, I don't know if I'm going to end up agreeing with all of these measures that Krug and others are proposing here. But I do appreciate they're trying. They're trying to get this absentee ballot thing across the finish line. You know, the GOP has concerns. Again, I don't think they're that legitimate about drop boxes. Maybe there's a simple way to address this, to quell some of those concerns. You know, maybe there's a simpler way than what is being proposed here to address some of those concerns. But I do appreciate that they're trying. You know, I appreciate that they're trying to get something done. And I always appreciate lawmakers who are taking a more pragmatic approach than just trying to do and say things to get headlines.
Well, and that's where I appreciate having you on, that you're essentially giving the benefit of the doubt to the Republican authors, saying, you know, let's find a way to get the early processing done that might also address some people's concerns. And that is definitely a glass half full way of looking. And I completely admit that I'm taking the glass half empty view of it that says we don't want that. We want to continue the conspiracy. So we're going to add on some stuff that also claims, you know, ties into conspiracies, that drop boxes are not trustworthy and things like that. So will something result from this that would pass and that would survive a veto by Governor Evers, or is this all just for show? I guess that's why you play the game, as the coaches like to say. It's why you hold the fall session and you see what comes out.
And I think too, you know, I'm waiting to see the full rollout of this. You know, this has passed the assembly. Representative Krug is in the assembly. Are there going to be any Republican state senators who are going to be getting on board with this too? Because that's where things stalled last time. If we're looking at the practicality of the path forward for some of these bills, like the early count bill passed in the assembly. It didn't in the Senate. So are there going to be people in the Senate joining for the rollout of this bill? I think that is an important factor to consider as well.
It really is, because it's something that, you know, those of us who watch or have been in the legislature know very well, but most others do not, is that the difference in caucuses, the Assembly Republicans and the Senate Republicans are frequently not on the same page, maybe not on positions, but on strategy or on specifics. And the same can be said of House Republicans and Senate Republicans in the U.S. Capitol. And by the way, same goes for Democrats. It's just that we're talking about Republicans because they're in control right now. And I don't know how to explain it any other way than to say turf. You know, these are turf battles between two different caucuses of the same party. And we see it a lot in the state capitol, in this case, especially with Assembly Republicans and Senate Republicans.
Yeah, and it's such a good point. There is, you know, this level of disarray, regardless of which legislative body you're looking at. But I think one thing in among the Republicans here, you know, Robin Voss has been the longest serving assembly speaker in state history, and he has been remarkably effective at getting his caucus to line up behind him on so many issues over the years. This being another one. But in the Senate, I think we're seeing. It has really been much more all over the place, especially lately. Like we had in the budget, you had the Assembly Minority Leader and the Senate President, both Republicans, voting on opposite sides of the budget bill. And I think it was the first time in a really, 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 really long time that that had been the case. And I think that is indicative of some larger tension and disarray that might be the case in among Senate Republicans. I think that is where you know, if you're looking at the outlook here for the next, you know, year plus of governing in Wisconsin, you know, I think the assembly might be able to get some things done Republicans might be able to pass some things in the assembly. But are they going to get anywhere in the Senate when they have the Republicans are very much not on the same page? The Democrats are waiting to flip the Senate and win the majority there in a year from now. I think that, you know, they're already announced a number of very strong candidates that would have the opportunity to do that. You know, I wonder what kind of reaction we're going to see in the Senate.
And by the way, this next point is very inside baseball. I'm going to admit that first and foremost. But if you want to know if the two caucuses from the same party disagree on something at the moment, watch for the sign of one of them passing a bill and then adjourning, gaveling out a session. Because that means the other house, the Assembly, the Senate, can't amend it and send it back to them because they've already gone home. It's like, nope, this is here to final offer. We're going home. If you ever see that, instead of waiting for each other, working out their disagreements and all that, if you don't see that, there is dissension. It's why you see those headlines, Democrats in disarray or Republicans in disarray. And it's goofy. And again, it's a theme we've hit several times here, is we all have to compromise in our day-to-day lives. And yet our politicians have sometimes the toughest time doing it. We're talking to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area and political editor of Civic Media. Since our last conversation, there's been another candidate coming in for governor. Francesca Hong announced last Wednesday, 2 days after Senator Kelda Royce got in the race. What's your assessment of the gubernatorial field, and whether we're at a static state now, or if we may be seeing more changes in the number of candidates in the near future?
Yeah, for one, I think we're gonna continue to see more candidates. I think this is going to be a pretty big field. But just to, we talked a little bit about Roy's announcement when I was on the show last week. So let's talk a little bit about Representative Hong's announcement. So I wrote this too early breakdown of the governor's race that you can read over at the Recombobulation Area. And I kind of had a big four of top contenders, which included Sarah Rodriguez, David Crowley, Kelda Royce, and the one candidate who's one of the candidates rumored to be announcing, but has not yet announced, an Attorney General Josh Call. Not sure what's happening with his political future, but that's a conversation for another time. But I had listed Francesca Hong's potential candidacy on that list, and I characterized her as the wild card, because I think that is the type of energy that she's going to bring into this campaign. She actually, I think, has embraced that a little bit. She talked about wanting to be the wild card in a few different interviews during the rollout last week. And one of the things about her and her candidacy that's already evident and is going to continue to be evident is that she's going to be just working really hard. She's announced this statewide tour. She's having events all over the place. She's been super active online. And I think that is just going to put pressure on the rest of the field to up their game a little bit, because nobody's going to outwork her. Having restaurant jobs in my past as well, nobody's going to outwork somebody who's had service industry jobs and working in restaurants. So I think she's just going to make everyone else in the field work that much harder. And I think that's ultimately a very good thing.
Yes. And she is the one who, again, when we say wild card, you say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, at some point, these candidates are going to have forums, if not full on debates. And Fran Hong is among those, especially those in the Socialist Caucus, who have come out and said, not just we want a hike in the minimum wage, we want it to be $20 an hour. And now this is just an example, and I'm putting words in her mouth, but she's the kind of candidate who at a forum would hear somebody give an answer, yes, we need a higher minimum wage. And she would just right out say to that fellow Democrat, say it, just say $20. Why won't you say $20 an hour? And you know why they won't? Because they don't want to be pegged down to a specific number. But Fran is the kind of person who'll be like, say it, $20, because otherwise maybe it's just $8 an hour. That's not going to work. And she's the kind of candidate who's going to hold fellow Democrats to the fire.
Yeah, and I also just think it's just almost this, the blocking and tackling of a campaign, and she's just going to be out there talking to people and meeting with people and going all over the state. And I think that is going to make everybody else just kind of up their game in these things. And I think that is, that competition's a good thing. Competition brings the best out of us. And I think that is part of why we want to have a primary like this.
Yeah. And that's where I think, again, even though more candidates may be coming, I think even with the ones that are in already, it may not be much longer before we start to see these kinds of forums where they can, again, you like to say, iron sharpens iron.
And that's right.
You get that through just these kinds of things. We're talking to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, and we will have some final news and notes with Dan and more from Lake Wissota coming up next. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You've probably heard about investors who got in on the ground floor of a company that grew to be a huge success. But successful investing isn't about luck or genius. Instead, it's about building durability. Here are some suggestions. First, think long term. Most investors make their money over time, not overnight. You'll want a well-diversified portfolio of quality investments and plan to own them for the long term. Next, invest in quality. For stocks, quality is often measured by the steadiness of earnings and dividend growth over time. For bonds, one measure is an investment-grade credit rating with a relatively low risk of default. And finally, build a long-term strategy to provide a roadmap for your investment choices. You may want to make changes periodically, but do it for the right reasons, like changing goals or tolerance for risk.
This content was provided by Edward Jones for use by Clay Canopy, your Wisconsin Rapids Edward Jones financial advisor at 715-421-0958.
Hi friends, it's Steven.
And Katrina from Family Natural Foods. We'll be having our 79th Customer Appreciation Day sale going on Friday, October 3rd, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturday, October 4th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., 910 West Grand Ave in Wisconsin Rapids.
We'll have samples and product experts answering your questions. Don't forget to sign up for some awesome door prizes and receive a free gift with purchase. Join us Friday, October 3rd and Saturday, October 4th for our 79th Customer Appreciation Day sale.
Working with nature since 1946.
Here's a dose of reality. Driving under the influence of prescription painkillers is just as illegal and just as deadly as driving drunk. In fact, there are nearly 2,000 drug-related crashes every year in Wisconsin. Help prevent drugged driving and let's achieve zero preventable deaths on Wisconsin roadways. Driving on pills kills. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Departments of Health Services, Transportation, and Justice.
My name is Chuck Collins. I'm the great-grandson of the meatpacker Oscar Mayer and a member of the Patriotic Millionaires, a collection of wealthy Americans who share a profound concern about the dangers of concentrated wealth and power in America. Now, the fact is, you may not care how much money another person has, but you likely do care how much power another person has, especially if they're using that power to rig the rules of the economy to make themselves richer and you poorer. You see, there is a point where money is no longer money, it's power. And when rich people use their money to drown out the voices of everyday people, it threatens the safety and security of us all. Patriotic millionaires don't want to live in a country with a few extremely rich people controlling everything, leaving millions of people struggling to just get by. Luckily, we have a solution. Tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. I'm Chuck Collins. I'm a patriotic millionaire, and I approve this message.
Tomorrow on the program, we will have State Superintendent Jill Underley, also Kathy Hempstead from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, on healthcare tax credits that Republicans in Congress and Donald Trump want to cut. They are at the center of the debate over a potential federal government shutdown. So all that and more tomorrow, but we're continuing things today here with Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, civic media political editor, and also guy who's doing a lot of stuff with a newsletter. That would include Civic Media's new daily newsletter, Civic Media Today, on the one and only Substack.com. This is a project that's kept you busy, young man.
Sure has. We've kept a lot of us busy. We've been putting a lot into this brand new newsletter. It's Civic Media Today. We're really excited about it. And it is just going to be a really terrific way for people to connect with all things across the Civic Media extended universe. There is, you know, links to live streams, Spotify podcasts, links to all of the news that we have from all over the state, led by our news director, Sholly Pittman. And I think this is, you know, for those of you who may only listen to, you know, Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, or may only know one other show on the network or something like that, this is a great way to engage with the huge amount of content that we produce every day across the Civic Media Network. And it's, I think it's going to be a really, and we have a little bit of fresh news to start things off each day with this newsletter. And I think it's just going to be a great one-stop shop to connect with everything, all things civic media.
And I say this as somebody who, you know, we've got an Up North News daily newsletter. We've got a weekly newsletter. I've got so many other newsletters that I like to look at. But I mean this very sincerely. this is one of the best designed, best put together newsletters of all the ones that I get in terms of links to the shows, links to stories that you're working on. Obviously, we'd love if people subscribe to all these shows as podcasts as well. But if you're not and you still want to see what seem to be some pretty important clips, you got to go see this. It's civicmediatoday.substack.com. Again, civicmediatoday.substack.com. Being put together by Dan Schaefer and a cast of thousands all across civic media land. There, among the stories you'd see there and others places would be more campaign announcements, not just for governor, but also for seats in the state assembly and the state senate. It was a busy one last week. Corrine Hendrickson announcing on our show here that she was running in the 17th Senate district, making her the third Democrat seeking to unseat Howard Markline, the co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee. But we are definitely in campaign announcement season this time of year, aren't we, Dan?
We sure are, and those have really been ramping up in recent weeks, and a couple big ones in here in the southeastern Wisconsin area over the past few days. So last week, Democrat Trevor Young announced that he would be running for state senate in District 21. Young is currently works for the city of Racine, and he previously served as an alderman in there in his hometown as well. Trevor is a young guy, so this would be a big shift in that representation in that district. The guy who is currently the incumbent there, State Senator Van Wangard, who has been there in quite a long time. And this is as close to a 50-50 district as there is going to be in the state Senate map next year. Last year in the election, this Kamala Harris won this by 1 point, Tammy Baldwin by 2 points. Currently represented by a Republican incumbent, Van Wangard, who is also about the same age as Tony Evers. So we don't know if he's going to be running for another 4-year term there as well. So certainly one of the, you know, and this is one of the top pickup opportunities, potential pickup opportunities for Democrats on the state Senate map next year. There are three districts won by Kamala Harris last fall that are currently represented by Republicans that have not seen elections under new maps. So this is one of those three. And I think this is really going to be one to watch. I'm really interested to see if Wangard will run again.
And I would be the first to note that his predecessor, Democrat John Lehman, I served with him in the state Senate in that area, obviously not the exact same district with the new maps. But it would not be unprecedented to have a Democrat serving in that Senate district again for the first time in several years now. From a state Democratic Party standpoint, there's a new, what do we want to call this? Well, they call it the Governor's Readiness Project. What is it that they're doing to help prepare the candidate field for 2026?
Yeah, so the Democratic Party of Wisconsin made this announcement yesterday that seems pretty interesting. It's called the Governor Readiness Project, and I think this is, you know, basically recognizing that there is going to be a big field in the campaign for governor, and that, you know, without wanting to put their thumb on the scale for any particular candidate throughout the primary, this is mainly the main focus here is to get whoever the Democratic nominee is ready for the general election in November 2026. And I think part of this is because Wisconsin's partisan primary is in August, so it doesn't give people that much time to run in the general election. You know, I do think a long-term thing we should think about is moving that partisan primary to the April spring election to give candidates a little bit more time to run in the general. But perhaps that's a conversation for another time. But it's interesting to see the Democratic Party of Wisconsin be especially proactive about this. And Tony Evers is getting involved. A number of, you know, kind of top officials from the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, including Chair Devin Remicker, are getting involved. And I'm going to be interested to see how this plays out in practice. But I think being this proactive about it is just really smart planning.
It is, because there's going to be a wealth of primaries in all of these legislative districts, in some congressional districts. And the worst thing that the Democratic Party, and I'm sure Republicans as well, have done at the state and county level is just sit on their hands and wait until there's a nominee and do virtually no preparation, no messaging or anything. So, like, for example, the Eau Claire County Party could do a lot to help facilitate the three Democrats running in the third district and not just sit there. So if the state party is showing that level of interest, activity, messaging, and preparation, that is a net positive for them. Read more from Dan Schaefer at therecombobulationarea.news and certainly through Civic Media. Dan, thank you. It's always good to connect. Have a great day.
Thanks, Pat. Be well.
All right. Thanks to all of you as well for being part of our mornings powered by Up North News. Enjoy your Tuesday. See you back here bright and early, 6 a.m. tomorrow here up north.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. As the UN General Assembly gets underway, the Secret Service says it seized an illicit network of sophisticated equipment in New York capable of shutting down all cellular networks in the region. CBS's Nicole Skanga.
The investigation began earlier this year when a number of unidentified White House officials, including some protected by the Secret Service, started receiving anonymous threats over the phone.
When President Trump addresses the General Assembly next hour, Secretary of State Marco Rubio will be with him. Rubio tells CBS Mornings his boss will address U.S. allies who've recognized a Palestinian state.
You're never going to have peace in that region as long as groups like Hamas exist.
Global health officials pushing back on the president's announcement linking the active ingredient in Tylenol to autism. Swedish scientist Victor Ahlqvist.
Trump's administration seemed to have misunderstood the available evidence. I think that this is an alarming message and it's an ill-backed message.